Wild West on KayakFishingRadio.com. I'm your host, Dennis Spike, broadcasting from the mouth of Bodega Harbor, Doran Beach in Bodega Bay, California, joined by my infallible co-host and fishmonger, Isaac the Nothing Miller. Hello, Isaac. What's shaking on your line tonight?
Hey, not a whole lot. Finally had a sunny day for the first time in a long time.
It's a sunny day up there. It's a rare thing with all the rain you've been getting.
That it is. We still have towns underwater, so it's nice to get a little break.
Just crazy. Boy, turning that phone around helps. Well, we got pretty busy here on the California coast today. The Crab Fest, the first Crab Fest Invitational. And by invitational, that means that everybody's invited. It was promoted through NCKA and many other worthy venues. Got a little press going on this thing. And it's about 100 people coming together with their kayaks to the public beach and campground. And what turned out to be a five-hour event on Sunday is stretching out over the whole weekend, and it's starting right now. And it's funny, I'm looking out. What's that?
I said right on.
I'm right at the mouth of the harbor here at Bodega Bay. The two jetties coming out, and the crab boats have been coming in from a day of fishing, the commercial crab boats. But I'm looking out there, and there's a couple of kayaks on the water and a smattering of traps. But I started thinking about the 100 people who are going to show up tomorrow, along with all the citizens who are coming to fish on their own with surfboards and rowboats and kayaks and fishing from the jetty. And I got to tell you, by tomorrow, or actually by Sunday when this event goes down at 7 a.m., I'll bet there's 500 pieces of crab gear sitting out right in front of me within 300, 400, 500 yards.
Wow.
Remember those Mad Magazine centerfolds where they do a satire on a special subject and just blow it up? That's what it looks like here every weekend during the crab season if there's anything going on. And the crabs, they are a-crawling. It seems like you just can't put enough pressure on them to make them disappear, whether it's recreational, commercial. The only changes seem to be in the weather and the conditions. But what's going up there? What's going on up there, Isaac? Are there any? How's the weather? For one thing, you said you got a day of sunshine. Are the creeks and rivers all swollen?
Yo, that they are. Like I said, there's still several highways underwater around here. It's been pretty rough, to say the least.
The rain's been extreme, not just normal winter rains.
Yeah, exactly. It's been pretty crazy. We got a little bit of snow one day, and that then it warmed up the very next day and brought a whole lot of the rain with it, and that just really sent all the water running down the hills, and like I said, quite
too
a bit
much
of cold,
too much cold, too much movement, too much change in the weather, especially when it's winter circumstances. It really throws the bite off.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have much to fish for around here unless you're in the San Francisco Bay. You can give the stripers a shot and you can fish for sturgeon. And those are good fisheries, but admittedly, I haven't had a chance to get out on them with so much going on. So we're just doing the crab thing. And the crabs, they are crawling. We had some good low tides in the last week, too. Once you guys plateau a little bit up there, we're about 400 to 500 miles, I'd say about 500 miles south of you, south of Portland, Oregon, here in Bodega Bay. But once you plateau a little bit, the fish are going to swell right up in those creeks, and you'll be back to catching steelhead again.
That we will.
That you will, you lucky guys. We got to wait for a fishing season unless we're fishing in the bay. Halibut and leopard sharks will pick up. And it's great sitting here at the mouth of Bodega Bay. It's such a splendid, not so out of the way part of California that very few people ever make it to. Looking out from here, I can see the wide open Pacific, a couple little rock islands out in front, and you can see the mouth of Bodega Bay, which is an incredible finger bay that was formed about 100,000 years ago. And we are sitting right on the San Andreas Fault. That's the one you hear about with all the big California earthquakes. And that's what formed that bay. But it's really an incredible fishery and ecosystem. And I'm looking forward to targeting those turbots and flounders we were talking about. It's hard to believe that you can catch flatfish when the crabs are crawling, but it can be done. People are out here on all nature of craft today. The fella next to me and his family, he's on a paddleboard. You got kayaks, there's rowboats and little motorboats out there. It's just going to be a convergence. The crab, you know, the price of crab doesn't seem to be coming down too much in the fish market there. You notice that, Isaac?
Oh, believe me, I did. Our prices actually went up. So.
Yeah, they've been up all year. They're, you know, the day of the $2.99 a pound special, I think, is long gone. Well, actually, short gone. We saw it for the last time for a few weeks last year, but I don't think we're going to see it this year.
Yeah.
What about reports? Is anybody getting out for anything up there?
You know, there's. I haven't got many reports from kayakers. You know, like I said, the rivers are just so high. A lot of the power boats that are able to get out, you know, there's still some. There are guys catching steelhead on the coastal rivers. Bank anglers and boaters alike are doing pretty decent out there. It's definitely not awesome fishing right now, especially with the waters as high as they are, but you know, there's fishing to be had nonetheless. So those that are making the best of it, they're having fun out there, that's for sure.
How far are you from the crabbing grounds in Portland?
Portland, you're looking at about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Oh, so it's quite a ways. You know, it's funny because it's such a strong fishery here, especially for the kayaks. And you think about it, putting 100 anglers together just to fish for crabs. And it's not putting them together. They just, it's like a cattle call. You put out the word and the people are coming. And, you know, I think I've mentioned it before. Fishing is an eating sport. And these people come together from every corner of the globe. And the potlucks that you know, on the California coast at the events I've been to are absolutely sensational. What events have you got going up there as far as kayak fishing tournaments?
You know, the big one that we have so far is just the Oregon Rockfish Classic. That'll be Father's Day, if I remember correctly, this year. And, oh, yeah, that's a huge, you know, we go out, we fish all day, and then we come back and just eat. You know, last year it was fish tacos. The year before that it was a fish fry. You know, fresh fish, fresh homemade tartar sauce. It was kind of amazing. So
now, where is that event held, Isaac?
That'll be at Depot Bay, which is on the
Depot
south
Bay
end.
Is a city on the Oregon coast.
That's right there on the Oregon coast, right?
Huh.
Yeah, world's smallest.
How many people turned out last year?
We had 30?
No, that's a nice turnout for a kayak fishing event. Now, is that promoted through the Northwest Kayak Anglers?
Exactly.
Yeah, nice. Is that the biggest kayak fishing event in the Northwest so far?
It is, absolutely, without a doubt.
I got to tell you, I see very soon that doubling in size and then doubling again down the road. Because the calls I'm getting, the way the sport's growing, the way we're looking at the shops and the attention. And you see it in Portland. There's a lot of people selling fishing kayaks up there. I think it's just a matter of time before the community comes together and you're going to have your 100-person kayak fishing tournaments.
It won't be too far off. You know, I know we have a couple other tournaments a year. One of the local shops here, Next Adventure, they've got a great bunch of people there. They're the only ones that have been catering to the kayak fishing community.
What's the name of the shop? I missed that.
Next Adventure. It's a great place. They're getting gear from Yak Attack, for rigging kayaks. They've got a whole bunch of Hobies there, a lot of guys there. That know fishing, or at least have fished from a kayak before. Don't find it everywhere. So there's a lot of good know-how at that store. And they host a couple events every year as well. Any time now, I'm expecting to hear about the Sturgeon Derby, the second annual Sturgeon Derby. It's going to be
now
real
that's
tough.
That's a Columbia River event, right?
They usually open it up to the Columbia and Willamette Rivers Bowl.
And the Willamette, right.
Right. That's going to be very tough this year. The Willamette River is only going to be open for sturgeon retention 4 days. This whole
really?
Year.
That's interesting. You know, and I got to say, it's interesting, and as hard as it hurts, it's a good thing, too. At least somebody's out there paying attention. You know, and I'm all for angler sacrifice, and we've shown, I mean, anybody who's got a problem with it just needs to look at the fisheries around them, and they're going to realize real quick that this leads to good things in a short amount of time. You know, I'll use a classic example, and that's when we fished the cod out of New England, and they were talking about 90 to 100 years for the cod to come back, and the reality is that the cod are coming back.
Yeah.
And our fisheries amazingly. I remember Isaac as a kid. I what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, one of the first things I wanted to be was an oceanographer because I was totally enamored with everything that Jacques Cousteau did. And just as a bookmark, I'm 52. So anybody who doesn't know who Jacques Cousteau is, he's a very, very interesting read. And indeed, the inventor of the scuba apparatus.
Right.
And I remember late in his career seeing a documentary where they were talking about dumping just metric massive tons of raw sewage and garbage into the ocean somewhere in the Mediterranean. And Jacques Cousteau made the comment about the miraculous recovery ability of the sea to absorb all of this. And I remember I was a young kid, teenager at the time, and saying to myself, oh, he's so wrong. And because at the time I was just becoming aware of the issues in the Santa Monica Bay, the coastal outfalls in the middle of the beach that I used to play in because they were warmer. those were storm drain runoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knew any better, but, you know, I'm sure Jacques Cousteau, through the work of his kids, has eaten his words on that one. Where was I going with all of that, Isaac? I wanted to be an oceanographer. And look where I ended up.
Hey, on the ocean.
Kayak fisherman. Yeah. I ended up at the mouth of Bodega Harbor.
Yeah, like I said, we got the sturgeon outline isn't looking too good here.
What's that?
The sturgeon outlook isn't, or the sturgeon isn't looking too great this year.
You know, on the
I'm
other
really
hand,
hoping.
The salmon fishery is strong, the steelhead fishery is strong, and we've got a lot of good energy looking into the sturgeon, keeping the salmon healthy, and I don't know how San Francisco Bay, just from a pollution standpoint, how the sturgeon survived there. I really don't. But they did. And now that in the Columbia River system, the Willamette and the Northwest states waters, they're looking at the sturgeon. You know, we've got sturgeon in places right now that we don't even talk about, where it's legal to take sturgeon. But, you know, I guess sometimes it's better, even if I'm looking at them right now, that we don't talk about them because these are dinosaurs. This is when people talk about true dinosaurs, these are the dinosaurs. Let me see if I can save somebody's bait from the seagulls here. And just another day at the beach, I tell you. And you know, the real dinosaurs are the coelacanths and the sturgeons. The sturgeons are running right behind them. And if you look at the issue with sturgeons, you know, we don't talk about it much, but especially with me, the whole thing about sturgeon is the roe. You know, while it's an excellent meat, we've got to be concerned with the bioaccumulation of toxins, so I couldn't be the trencherman and eat quite the anywhere near the quantities of sturgeon that I would want to. And again, from your fishmonger's point of view, listeners should know that if you can find farm-raised sturgeon fresh in the store anywhere, find it online, this is a sensational meat. Do you agree with that, Isaac?
I can't speak to that.
You know, I've done a little research on what they're doing outside of Sacramento on farm-raised sturgeon, and they've got it from the water they're pumping in to what they do with the water when they pump it out. And they're making a quality product. They're producing both meat for restaurants and markets, and they're producing roe for caviar.
Right.
And ecologically, environmentally, it's a sound practice of sturgeon farming, and I'm way into it.
Cool. Yeah, that does sound cool. You know, I've ordered sturgeon once at my store. It came in, and it was farmed in Canada and fed chicken, so I sent it back.
You know, how long ago was that?
It was about 2 years ago.
2 years, yeah. This is, I don't remember the name of the farms, and they're outside of Sacramento, you know, which is classic farming country around here. And big tanks is what they're growing these fish in. And I'm really excited about it. It's gone over well in the market. It's gone over well with Monterey Bay Rating System, the aquarium. That's the only credit I'll give them today.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Isaac? Do you think a Crab Fest type of event would go over well up in your neck of the woods?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've talked about it. There's a lot of folks that are interested in the idea. We've only tried it once, and it just didn't work out. The one time that we've given it a shot, there was, 4 or 5 of us out there on the water that day.
Oh, really? So real low turnout.
It was real low. Like I said, it was just not the best timing. We had just...
It was 2 weeks. The right timing and alignment of the stars.
Yeah. I think it was like 2 weeks after the Oregon Rockfish Classic in 2010. So, you know, we had a lot of guys that just used some vacation time or their get-out-of-jail-free card at home. And then trying to do that again 2 weeks later just didn't quite work out. Definitely something I'd like to see happen.
The truth about all these events, too, is that most anglers have a limited amount of time and opportunity that they have to take a day or let alone a weekend off to go and do these kayak fishing events. And also in the bad economy, you know, and not even in the bad economy, considering traveling costs, bringing the family and all that, you know, you have to budget. I mean, it becomes a part of recreational budget. That said, I'm taking what I hope isn't a very big risk. And I don't know if you know it, Isaac, but I have a whole checklist of really lucky things that have happened to me since I've been in kayak fishing. And one of those things is that we had, through kayakfishing.com, the first kayak fishing tournament that was ever held, ever. Anywhere. And that was at Shelter Island in San Diego. And I did a few more, and it was one with a big white sea bass caught off of Black's Beach, which was the traditional nudist beach north of San Diego. And we did the tournament headquarters in San Diego Harbor, and it was just a fun barbecue award ceremony, and that was the first kayak fishing tournament, I believe, in 1996. And I did a couple tournaments after that, I think one in San Diego, a couple in Malibu, and I haven't done a tournament since. And it's funny, because back in those days, kayakfishing.com was the only website. I was the only guide. It was really the infancy of the sport. And what's happened since then, not only in Southern California where I started, but virtually every major fishery in the United States has a strong kayak fishing presence. And it's been, what, over a decade since I've done a kayak fishing tournament. And now, I'll talk about it later when we have more time, but now that I've put my name behind a brand, I found the RTM kayaks I've talked a few times about before, and I'm going to do another tournament. That's the high and low of that. And I'm going to do it in October. I'm going to do it here on the Sonoma coast. And I notice that most tournaments are shying away from giving away kayaks. And I don't know anybody who wouldn't want a second kayak in their garage. So at this tournament, I think we're going to give away one kayak for every 25 people who sign up. And that way people coming out are going to have a much, and nobody can win two kayaks. By the way, those days when I had the first tournaments in the sport, I set up a set of rules that did two things. They let people win a lot of prizes, and pretty much every time we got a good raffle going, everybody went home with stuff. It let people win a lot of prizes, and usually everybody who came, but it also reduced the take by half. And no relation to my events, but I've seen on the California coast, a lot of the NCKA and Northwest events, they're all real conscientious about killing fish. Mm-hmm. And just because you can take 7 or 10 doesn't mean that an event should take 7 or 10. And we have really innovative rules, and we'll see that in this event too. And and we'll have a catch and release, photo and release and measure category. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited about it. I haven't done a tournament in a long time. And you know what I'm most excited about, besides the weigh-in, is the tournament banquet. One thing I've noticed, not only here in California, but all over the country, is that is people doing potlucks. And I know for a long weekend that you got to have your kitchen and everybody's going to be cooking anyway, but I've always liked bringing out the cooks and the caterers and the help and taking the burden of Friday and Saturday night dinner off of people. Whether I was doing a trip down to Baja or Big Sur or the tournaments. And what I decided to do for, and I think we're going to call it the kayakfishing.com Fall Classic.
There you go.
I don't know what a classic is. Well, we're not really that steadfast on the name, but I'll let you know. And what we're going to do is there's a guy here in Sonoma County named Gerard. And Gerard has made his career in paella, the Spanish dish. You know what paella is, all fishermen. It's a fisherman's dish from Spain. Excuse me. And I was like, and Gerard has requested that he can make the Friday night dinner for everybody who shows up for the tournament, so they don't have to worry about that. And it's going to be an awesome paella with a lot of locally gathered stuff. What we can't gather locally, we'll buy, but a lot of it's going to be locally gathered. And it should be all organic. I don't know how you can serve dinner around here without it being all organic. And Saturday night, we're having the tournament feast. And it's included with everybody's registration, but it's a surf and turf, and it's served on a big platter with a lot of aluminum foil because there's a lot to take home. And if you're bringing your significant other or a friend, you never want to buy an extra meal ticket because there's just too much food. There's also a kids' restaurant with burgers and veggie burgers and all that stuff. Does it sound like I like doing kayak fishing tournaments?
Sounds like you like to eat. At least.
It's part of fishing, I tell you.
That it is.
No, it's funny because you've got, I was telling you here at Crab Fest at Doran Beach, there's people from every corner of the globe. It's such a big kayak fishing community that shows up for these events. And just walking through camp, you smell the smells. But I'm not allowed to eat the way I was the first 50 years. And I got to tell you, that first 50 years was a good run. So I just keep it real small quantities and tastes of everything.
Uh-huh.
What else have you got for us, Isaac?
Well, let's see. What else we got? We got you know, the big thing everyone's talking about right now, at least in the Northwest, is salmon season. Right now we're in steelhead season. Next month we're going to be in salmon season. Spring Chinook on the Columbia River and the Willamette for that matter. And ODFW and WDFW, that being Oregon and Washington Fish and Wildlife Services, announced yesterday what the season is going to be this year.
That's some news.
That's big news. Right now, both rivers are open. Of course, there's not a whole lot of fishing going on for fish that haven't quite showed up yet. But they're talking about a seven-day-a-week fishery, which is excellent. You know, years past, we've had only 3 days a week to fish. Right now, we've got all seven, except for 3 days in March, March 20th, 27th, and I'm sorry, April 3rd. They're all Tuesdays. Those days, no fishing on the water. It's going to be commercial gill nets only. So,
on the off days, it's commercial gill nets?
That is correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's controversial.
Oh, absolutely it is. You know, but it's actually, there's a whole lot less conflict when they're not both on the water at the same time.
Now, this is not only the respective states, but also they're working in cooperation with National Marine Fisheries, correct?
Right.
Wow. It blows my mind just to hear that gill nets are even being used.
Yeah. Actually, no, the gill nets on the rivers, that's not a National Marine Council. That is local.
State jurisdiction.
Exactly.
Very interesting. So you're just waiting on some good weather at this point, huh?
Exactly. You know, it's we're looking real good. And they're expecting probably the fourth largest return of spring Chinook salmon on record. So over 300,000 fish.
In both rivers.
In both rivers.
And
so
if you don't have a kayak, the only access is if you're a private boater, is that right?
Exactly. There are a few areas for bank fishing.
Right.
But I'll tell you, it's a lot easier if you're in a boat or a kayak.
Yeah, I think bank fishing, whether it's with limited access on the rivers for salmon or on the eastern seaboard for striped bass, when the fish are running, and that's funny, that's not a term I use often, when the fish are running. But when the fish are running, it's shoulder to shoulder, and that's driven a lot of people into kayaks.
Right, and it's no different here. You know, guys, every 10 feet, there's another rod set in the sand. It's pretty remarkable, to say the least. But looking good this year for the Chinook, and I'm getting really excited for it. I'm probably going to try to spend more of my time on the Willamette River this year as opposed to the Columbia, like I did last year. We'll find out if that pays out this time.
Isaac, let me ask you, do you know that by the time those Chinook get to you, how long has it been since they entered the river?
Less than 48 hours.
They're moving pretty fast. So
they
there's
are,
no issue. You could actually sashimi those fish without any issues. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, these fish still have sea lice on them. They're fresh.
Right. I think that's what you're looking for, too. You know, it's funny. There's certain fish like a 22-inch and 1/4-inch halibut or a saltwater salmon that I have a lot of trouble putting on the fire. These are fish that I really prefer to eat in their natural, uncooked state. But again, if you're fishing those fish in the Snake River, there's no way you can eat a salmon raw. That fish has to be cooked. And you know, it's just more and more enticement for me to get up there. And I'm really excited about having some really quality salmon fishing because That's one of the things that I've never really, I've had my moments where I've caught salmon, but I've never been to the nirvana of salmon fishing. And I know when the season is right and the fish are running, that's exactly what you get there.
Mm-hmm. It'll be fun. Looking forward to it.
Let me get back in here. I get a little breakup going on.
Okay.
Let's see if we can't carry this to the 45-minute mark. You know, I was curious about a few things. I mean, most of us who don't fish the salmon and want to, pretty much all we know is what we've read and what little experience we've got. When you get on these fish, you're going to go fishing for the Chinooks in a few, within a few weeks probably. What's your rigging going to be? What pound test are you going to use? What kind of rod and reel? And what's on the end of that thing? What's your terminal tackle and your bait?
You know, there's basically two different methods for Chinook. You can sit on the anchor or you can troll for them. When the water's cold, as it is still right now, say all the way through mid-March, maybe into April, I'm going to troll herring. Those are plug-cut herring. And what that means is the head is cut off of the herring at an offset beveled edge, and when you're trolling at a mile and a half, 2 miles an hour, it causes that herring to spin real tight in the water, a lot like a spinner blade would do. Throw a couple
salmon
of hooks on
them. Salmon are just like giant trout in that regard.
Exactly. So here we've got a piece of bait that's flashy and smells like them. So I run a leader. These fish are not leader shy at all. I run 20 to 30 pound test fluorocarbon leader. A lot of guys that I know will also use 40 pound. 40 pound monofilament, not a problem.
So there's no line shyness, and the water's real murky anyway, isn't it?
It's usually got some cloudiness to it. Not too bad.
Are you guys using fluorocarbon leaders?
I do. It all depends. Some guys use fluorocarbon, some guys don't. I happen to have a couple of good-sized spools of 20 and 30 pounds fluorocarbon, so that's what I use. So,
yeah. The reason I bring it up is it's been such a factor in all of my fishing, you know, especially for yellowtail tuna and targeting specific species. But I don't think, I think that in the 10 years that I've been fishing fluorocarbon leader, I couldn't go to a new fishery and not fish it. I really think that it's one of the few things that's come along that makes a difference. But I'm really glad to hear you're fishing with cut bait for the salmon. And now, are you using your sonar to look for holes and deep spots in the river? Are you trying to mark fish at all, or are you just going to spots that you know?
A little bit of both. Going to spots that I know, because, I mean, these rivers have been fished for 100 years. Everybody knows where the salmon are. What
right.
you're really looking for are shells.
So you're looking for conditions and structure.
Yeah, we're looking for shells where they'll cruise right along the edge of that shelf.
Or pack up on the bank, right.
Exactly. You know, we're going to, I try typically fish in 15 to 20 feet of water. You know, if the flows are real high, I'll go as shallow as 10 feet. You know, keeping the bait down on the bottom is the biggest key. Just off the bottom of the floor, that's where the fish are going to be.
Now, the Willamette's not as big a river as the Columbia. You're breaking up a lot there, Isaac.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
The Columbia is not as big a river as the, the Willamette's not as big a river as the Columbia, but it's still a pretty big river in spots, isn't it?
It is. It is a good-sized river, that is for sure. There's no question about that. You know, I talk about sturgeon fishing on the Willamette River, and I'm fishing in spots that 100 feet deep, you know. it is a big river. There's a lot of water running through there. You know, this time of year, an average day, that river is running about 70,000 cubic feet per second.
Oh, you have a speakerphone there, Isaac.
No, I'm on my headset as usual.
Oh, okay. It's just I must have a bad connection here, and I apologize for that.
Amen.
Well, it's really, really exciting stuff. Now, when you anchor up, is that going to be in warmer water with slower moving conditions?
No, anchoring up, you know, that's just, it really depends on the day. If I feel like paddling a lot, I'll be trolling. You know, there's also specific locations that it works better to sit on the anchor.
Yeah, I've noticed that even some rivers are better for anchoring and some are better for trawling. I know here on the Russian River, what I'm doing is I'm running up and down my spots and I'm looking for holes. I'm looking for depressions. Again, I'm looking for banks and structure that the fish might pack up or run along. But I'm looking for those deeper areas, and I'm also trying to identify how much junk is laying in the bottom, you know, whether there's trees or branches, because it's easy to lose a lot of gear. And when I find, you know, by drifting through them. So am I coming through loud and clear, Isaac?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Thanks, brother. And so what I'm doing is once I identify, now the Russian River is a much smaller and narrower river than what you're talking about, and the rivers north of us. So you've got a lot of tighter areas. And where you don't have these deep holes, it's very, very shallow. On seasons when we don't have a lot of rain coming down, you're going to end up portaging these boats in spots. But when I find the deep spots, what I like to do, and this is, of course, using row or using cut baits, is I like to identify the deep spots, anchor up on top of them, and then drop my presentation into the current down into the hole to try to get a bite. And I'm sure that's pretty much what you're doing there on anchoring, or are you just gaining position in the river?
Just gaining position in the river. You know, there's specific lanes that these fish travel up, and you just anchor up right in that lane and get in their way.
I can't wait, I tell you. I can't wait. And it is one of my favorite fish.
It is. It is the best eating salmon there is. These spring, for folks that don't know, these spring Chinook salmon, we call them springers up here. They're in the river for at least 9 more months. So they have built up the most fat in their body. And of course,
wow.
We know fat is flavor. So we catch them as soon as they come out of that salt water, and they are just sweet, succulent, wonderful fish.
Sing it, Paula Deen. Very, very exciting stuff. And, you know, it's very distracting to be doing the show from the beach and see a fish jump out of the water, which, again, knocks the heck out of my theory that the fish aren't here when the crabs are crawling.
Mm-hmm.
But the crabs are crawling, and the fish are here. Do you ever get out to the lakes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Crappie. You got crappie that far north?
Yes, we've got crappie. We've got walleye here in the rivers also, not in the lakes, but in the lakes. Kokanee, like you mentioned, trout, large and smallmouth bass in a lot of the lakes.
You know, this is the fishing this time of year we need to bring into the radio show. And speaking of that, I was talking to Chip. I don't know how much you got copied on those emails, but Chip is suggesting that we move the show later, maybe to 8 p.m. Pacific time, because while we're getting a lot of people logging on for the archive shows, we're getting good listenership there. We're not getting a lot of people, and I guess it's probably because we're doing it during rush hour on the Pacific Coast. So
right.
Did you get copied on any of that?
I did. I saw that.
So we probably will, about 3 or 4 weeks down the road, move the show to 8 o'clock I'm going to beef up my promotions and see if we can get more people in. We're going to start logging some guests, have some special guests on the show, and get more anglers to phone in and pose questions and give us their reports and beef it up, because we've got a big fishing community out here, and we need to show those East Coast guys up a little bit.
There you go. Sounds great.
I'm looking forward to it. So we got all kinds of stuff coming up. When is that Rockfish event? What were the dates on that again by you?
I believe that's Father's Day this year.
Father's Day. That would be a wonderful time for me to come up and fish the Oregon coast.
That it would.
I like that idea a lot. I like
love
that
to
idea.
Have you.
And then come either the third or the fourth weekend of October, I'll get these dates nailed down here within a week or so. We're going to have the kayakfishing.com Fall Classic, and I have a feeling, going back 16 years in the sport, that we're going to have people coming from far and away. And I think we might be able to pull about 150 people out to the Oregon coast, to the California coast, for this event. And before anybody gets jittery about 150 people fishing in the same spot, we don't do it that way. We open up a very big part of the coast. And that way people can spread out. They can fish their favorite spots if they know them. They can hook up with other people. And the only requirement is that they're back at the scales by the time they need to be back at the scales. And we've done that in lots of events in the past, and it works out real well. We're also going to do 2 days of fishing for the Fall Classic. We're going to, and what I think that means is that people who come to free fish on Friday will get an opportunity to win a boat. And some other swag. Yeah, why not? People want to come, and they want to win. And we want them to win, too. So we're going to get a lot of nice sponsorship behind this. We're going to take in a lot of guineas and give a lot of stuff away, raise some money for some good causes. There's always a few anglers out there that could use a shot me on, and there is always a strong fishery cause that we support in any event endeavor that we do. And this weekend, we got the Crab Fest. I'm still trying to nail down what the contributions are on that. I know they're going somewhere. I just don't know where. And I'm excited. 100 people out crabbing. You know, I think what I was going to mention before, I mean, we're just so fishy about it. Any excuse to get in the kayak. But I look at places like the Chesapeake Bay and Florida, where crabbing has a very, and even New England, where coastal crabbing and offshore crabbing has a very, very strong presence in the fishery, and it hasn't caught on yet with kayak anglers. And I really think it's only a matter of time, especially when we look at the quality of fishing, the added opportunity, and the cost of these crabs in the market. Do you get any crabs from Chesapeake Bay?
No, I don't. Only Dungeness.
Well, that's the only crab that you guys sell. That's because you're hoity-toity, and I like that.
Yeah.
No, but I think, what do they have? They have the blue crab?
The blue crab.
Isn't that the popular Baltimore crab sandwich?
That is.
Yeah, you know, that's one of those things that you have to be genetically inclined to appreciate, and its lack of success beyond the Chesapeake Bay is testimony to that. I tried them, and I couldn't get into that soft shell crab sandwich. I think that's something you got to grow up with, like split pea soup or tuna fish casserole. What do you think, Isaac? Do you think we gave them any information at all tonight?
Oh, I'd like to hope so.
I want to thank everybody for tuning into the archives. We're getting a lot of good hits on that, and we're going to change the time on the show so we're not catching you in your car or during the dinner hour and get the opportunity to listen live, to phone in, to join the show. I want to remind listeners that although the show is on the West Coast of the United States, we welcome all of your questions and comments about the sport. from all the fisheries, U.S., Canada, we want to hear from you. And we're going to be back next week. Can I take us out, Isaac? You got some banjos for us?
I don't have any banjos, but I got some good surf guitar going on.
Even better. Isaac, thanks for joining me tonight and co-hosting the show. We did get some good information out there, talked about some fishing, and I'm really excited about the Kayak Fishing Radio Wild West show and what it's going to grow into in the next few weeks. And thank everybody for joining us. Have good fishing, and we'll see you next week at 5 o'clock on Fish in the Wild West. Thank you.